Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Never minded the role of the underdog, and have relished as much as anyone come from behind wins. Tonight, I think we must get used to the idea that we are the Republican Party frontrunner for the nomination of the President of the United States.
So John McCain won 511 delegates yesterday to only 176 for Romney and 147 for former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, according to AP results, though still not quite complete. A total of 1,023 delegates were up for grabs in 21 states on the Republican side. Overall now, McCain leads with 613 delegates to 269 for Romney and 190 for Huckabee. It takes 1,191 to win the nomination at this summer's convention in St. Paul, Minnesota. So McCain is well over halfway there and apparently well on his way. On the Democratic side, listen to how close this was yesterday. And remember, we spent so much of yesterday saying it's about delegates, 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 not who wins what state. And when all was said and done, Clinton got 584 delegates to Obama's 563, practically a super-duper tie. Now, again, not quite complete results, as AP is still totaling some final tallies that are dribbling in. But out of 1,681 delegates that were at stake in 22 states and American Samoa, Clinton 584, Obama 563. Wow. Overall, that gives Clinton 845 delegates and Obama 765. And on the Democratic side, you need 2,025 to claim the nomination in Denver at this summer's convention. So we will drill down deeper on those numbers and what they tell us about the candidates and ourselves. We have three guests: WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein, Mark Halperin, editor-at-large and senior political analyst for Time Magazine, and Liz Halloran, senior writer for U.S. News and World Report. Good morning to all of you. Okay, who got more than 4 hours sleep? Raise your hands. Not me. My hand is not up. Andrea, I want to start hyper-local, and then we'll spread out to nationwide results with everyone, maybe even to the American Samoa Democratic Caucuses, which Clinton won, in case you were wondering. Andrea, they awarded many delegates in New York by congressional districts on the Democratic side, and you've got both names and numbers, right?
Yeah, right. American Samoa. It's probably because Clinton was the one who remembered to put it in her press releases more. In New York, the Democratic Party last night released unofficial totals for the 29 congressional districts. And according to these numbers, Clinton won 25 of the 29. But the two highest voting turnout districts were split. Barack Obama won the 11th congressional district, that is Congresswoman Yvette Clark's district. It includes Crown Heights, Park Slope, Brooklyn Heights. It's the sort of Obama coalition of the anti-war vote, the liberal Democrats, and the African-American vote. Clinton won a district which has been much talked about, Charlie Rangel's district in Harlem, partly because it has a big Latino population, but also because Rangel, among New Yorkers, worked his district the hardest. He was out Sunday. There were sound trucks out in his district. He was going around to churches. There was a little bit of grumbling at Clinton headquarters last night that they hadn't worked hard enough to get out the vote, that they didn't have enough volunteers in New York, and that with this all about the delegates, as we know, and them having battled it to a draw, there was a feeling that maybe they could have squeezed a few more delegates out of New York State if they'd had more of a ground operation.
And what was the split in New York State? Do you know it?
Oh, the split was...
It was about 60-40, right?
It was about 60-40. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but I think it was about 120-something for Clinton, 80-something for Obama. So he did quite well in New York. And when you think about that, 80 delegates is a lot more than the state of New Hampshire going to Denver in the summer. So that was a good strategy on Obama's part to sort of work New York and to try to turn out the vote here and to get a number of delegates from New York. The votes were distinguished a little bit nationally, and particularly Clinton did best among African Americans in New York. In some states, Obama got more than 80%, 8-0, of the African American vote. But in New York, he beat Clinton 3-2. So she held on to the African American vote in New York more than anywhere else. And that has been a very solid base for her in both of her campaigns.
3-2 would mean she got 40% of African American voters in New York State. All right. Mark Halperin, tell me what all of this means nationally. Tell me something I don't know.
Oh, Brian, you know everything, so that's a challenge.
Wrong.
That is a challenge that I'm not foolish enough to take up. Something you probably know is that the rest of the February calendar is very advantageous for Obama. That's something that both the campaigns agree with. He is hoping to come out of February having won most of the contests to give him some momentum into Texas and Ohio, the next two big states that vote next. And she's hoping to survive the killing fields of February, to find a way to minimize his financial advantage, which is considerable at this point, and to keep her advantage with women, Hispanics, older voters, and downscale voters to do well enough in those two big states, and hopefully well enough in February, that she emerges about a month from now in the early March, after the early March contest, as the front runner.
Liz Halloran, tell me something I don't know.
About McCain?
Yes, you were covering the Republicans more closely. Let's go to that side.
Yes, it looks like he didn't have the uber-dominating night that he and his strategists wanted, but he certainly seems to be on a path to the nomination. The questions now are, what will Romney do? Mitt Romney spokesman Kevin Madden was just saying, characterizing last night as a strong showing for Mitt Romney, which I think goes against the grain of what most people saw last night. And they say they're encouraged by the results and want to go on to Kansas, Washington, and Virginia, where they think so the conservative support will push him up, give him some more delegates. Huckabee obviously was a surprise last night, and but in the end, it looks like McCain is on a clear path to nomination right now. You know, what does Romney do? What does Huckabee want? Where does McCain go now? And what does he have to do to win over these restive conservatives?
Let's break that down a little bit more. I mentioned the big number, 613 delegates for McCain last night to, I mean, overall, 613, more than halfway to the nomination and way ahead of Romney, who has 269, and Huckabee, who has 190. One of the big stories last night, in addition to McCain's 511 delegates to Romney's only 176, was how close Mike Huckabee did come to Romney at 147 delegates. Again, slightly incomplete numbers from the Associated Press. State-wise, in terms of the popular vote, that means Romney won Massachusetts, Utah, North Dakota, Montana, Minnesota, Colorado, and Alaska. But I think this took us in the media by surprise, Liz, that Huckabee won West Virginia, the caucuses, Arkansas, his home state, that's not a surprise, Alabama, Georgia, and Tennessee. So he did really well in what you might call the Bible Belt.
He did, and as a matter of fact, Georgia was one of the big surprises. The polls had showed him coming in third, a couple of the latest polls before Super Tuesday. Now, in West Virginia, as you and your listeners probably know, there apparently was some kind of a deal made between McCain delegates at the West Virginia caucuses to go over to Huckabee's side and then defeat Romney, who was leading after the first ballot. Now, they are claiming there was no contact between the two campaigns, but I think you'd have to be naive to believe that the McCain camp and the Huckabee camps are not talking. But he did show great strength in the South.
Mark, you want to dive in on that question of whether the McCain and Huckabee camps are talking or colluding even in any way? I know after the West Virginia caucuses yesterday, not a big media spotlight there, but Romney was favored to win. And McCain wasn't doing well, but then McCain threw his delegates, apparently his caucusers, to Huckabee, and the two of them together gave Huckabee the win. So there was some afternoon media spin that Huckabee had the first victory of the day, not Romney, and conservative talk radio was just hammering the McCain camp for, quote, colluding with Huckabee, and for that matter, hammering Huckabee for being willing to collude with McCain. What do you know?
Well, I know that despite some denials, some of them a little bit angry about whether there was a deal, that someone from one of the two campaigns said to me after the first ballot, in which Romney was ahead, but McCain and Huckabee combined for nearly half the vote, just you wait till the second ballot. Now, maybe they're just really intuitive, but I think there was an actual deal made and an understanding. And the rhetorical and practical dance between Huckabee and McCain has been extraordinary almost from the beginning. They say nice things about each other. If you look at the trajectory that John McCain has followed in order to get to the place he's been, in many instances, even in Michigan, a state that they both lost to Romney, Huckabee has been McCain's best friend almost every step of the way, in Michigan, in South Carolina, even in Iowa to some extent, by keeping Romney from winning there. So I think that, to the extent there are deals, I wouldn't be surprised. To the extent there aren't deals, there might as well be.
Which brings us to Liz's question from before. Liz, what does Huckabee want?
Well, of course, there's a lot of talk about him wanting a spot on the top ticket with McCain, potentially. I don't think that there are many in the Republican Party who think that Huckabee can go through and win the nomination. He, last night, of course, is saying that that is certainly in his sights.
But does he really make a strong vice president, vice presidential candidate?
Well, that's a question. Some in the conservative community think that he's not conservative enough on fiscal issues. But as he showed last night, he does have some geographic strength in the South. He brings, he potentially could bring evangelicals to the polls. I think there's a great concern in the Republican Party about motivating mm-hmm. conservatives and getting them to the polls this fall, particularly when the Democrats are so excited and motivated to vote. So he could bring something there.
We are going to open up the phones, and listeners, we want not your electioneering after the fact in our area for the candidate of your choice, but your questions or comments about the results. If there's any state that you want to know more about, we may be able to get that for you. If there's any demographic group that you want to know more about, we may be able to get that for you, or anything like that, or any of your observations on the actual results from Super Duper Tuesday. For WNYC's Andrea Bernstein, Liz Halloran from U.S. News, and Mark Halperin from Time, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post a comment to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. Andrea, I said before the break that perhaps the biggest story of Super Duper Tuesday is that win or lose the nomination, a black man could win in states from Connecticut to Missouri to Alaska, to win the popular vote in all these places. And we have, here's the full list in case you all haven't heard it. Barack Obama winning the majority of the popular vote in Georgia, Illinois, Connecticut, Delaware, Colorado, Alabama, Utah, North Dakota, Kansas, Minnesota, Idaho, Alaska, and Missouri. And a lot of those states, Andrea, especially as you go west, are states with very small African-American population. So somebody's voting for Barack Obama.
I think that, you know, sort of depending on your screen, you could look at this as a very, very positive result for race relations in America, or you could be disturbed by the racial divide in the Democratic Party with huge majorities of African-Americans voting for Barack Obama and sort of lower-income whites carrying it out for Hillary Clinton. Now, the other thing that is so interesting about these exit polls is Hillary Clinton should really be saying muchas gracias today, because in California, the Latino vote was huge for Hillary Clinton. It helped her in Arizona. It is heartening news for her, for Texas. And it tells you something so interesting about the role of immigration in this race, because it wasn't so long ago that we were all talking about how toxic that issue was, how it had killed the McCain candidacy because he wanted to push forward immigration reform. There were all kinds of ads linking immigrants to terrorists. The rhetoric was red hot. And when you look at last night, what do you see? Well, big Latino turnouts for the Democrats, which helped Hillary Clinton, and John McCain well on the way to nomination. And he was the one that was supposed to be killed by this issue. So there might be some resetting of what happens with immigration reform now in the country.
And funny enough, I think this was part of the Karl Rove strategy for the Republican Party and the Bush administration, which was to be really conservative on many things to energize the base and hope to keep that majority and build that majority through turnout of the base, but to be more expansive on immigration and try
right.
to build that Latino swing
to,
vote.
Right.
And, of course, the base of the mm-hmm. party turned around and shot that down. But, Mark Halperin, the number that I have for white men nationally in Democratic primaries yesterday is 53% for Hillary, 41% for Obama. I think that's whites overall. Do you have a number for whites or white men?
White men, I think, was 47-45. Obama.
Now, that's so really interesting.
Pretty even split. Although, if you want to look for a depressing result, go look at the Tennessee exit poll, where Obama was wiped out amongst whites, did very well with African Americans, but wiped out amongst whites, and that cost him the state. There are some great splits, great from a journalistic and sociological, anthropological point of view here, but some a little bit troubling, particularly for those who would like to see us be gender blind and color blind and income blind. She continues to do well, as I said before, with Hispanics, with women, with lower income voters, with older voters. He continues to do well with younger voters, with African American voters and upscale voters. And, you know, they're both trying to amplify their bases and poach on the other one's turf. But some of these upcoming states, the reason we say that Obama's going to do well is because the demographics of the states are his. And the reason why she's banking on Texas and Ohio and Pennsylvania is because the demographics look much better for her.
We'll continue in a minute. We'll start taking some of your many calls and read some of your comment page posts. WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. Our phone lines are full right now at 212-433-WNYC as we drill down on those super duper Tuesday results. Stay with us.
Over the past few days, a lot of people have been trying to say that this is a two-man race. Well, you know what? It is. And we're in it.
Well, it's a two-man race for second anyway right now on the Republican side with Huckabee surprisingly close to Mitt Romney. John McCain way ahead now in the delegate count. We'll see what Romney decides to do in the coming days. He says he's staying in. With Andrea Bernstein, WNYC political director, Mark Halperin, editor-at-large, senior political analyst for Time Magazine, Liz Halloran, senior writer for U.S. News and World Report, and with John in River Edge. John, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good. What are you thinking?
Well, I've read an article so many times about the breakdown of women voting in the election, and they made the point that it seems that higher-income white women don't vote for Hillary for personality reasons. Has that found out to be the case with exit polls?
Upper-income white women, is that your question?
Yeah, they always make the comment that women support Hillary in campaigns, but seeing traditionally the ones who support Hillary are the ones who are either low-income or black women, and we separate that from the white women, upper-income, they seem not to support Hillary. And I find that in my own experience, mm-hmm. the women I talk to, they just dislike Hillary intensely.
Andrea, so do you have numbers to...
Yes, I don't have exact numbers on that, but it's certainly true that Hillary Clinton has been doing more poorly than Barack Obama among upper-income people in general. And certainly what I have found and what seems to have happened now yesterday, and it happened in New Hampshire, is that the sort of more working-class women are coming out for Hillary Clinton. And there were actually people yesterday who told me, I was going to vote for Barack Obama, but I decided to vote for Hillary Clinton because of health care or because of economic issues. There seems to be a little sort of reset that is happening when people actually go into the vote voting booth, and the lower income women in particular are responding to Clinton's economic pitch. The people who need government less, sort of in their daily lives to make things happen, the white people seem to be much more supportive of Barack Obama.
Willing to roll the dice on bigger change, more abstract ideas, those kinds of things. Eric in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Eric.
Hi. My question is, with the way it looks with Obama and Hillary, it looks like they're splitting and perhaps neither will have a sufficient number of delegates when it comes down to it. Doesn't that imply that at the convention it's going to be decided by superdelegates who essentially, well, it seems like it makes the primary voting system not so valid?
Talk about the superdelegates, Mark Halperin.
Well, this is one of the big things. I think the caller, as a normal Brian Lehrer Show caller, is astute and forward-looking. The superdelegates make up about a fifth of the total delegates. Clinton has a lead there. In fact, her lead in overall delegates is based on having a lead in superdelegates, elected officials, party officials, former presidents. Bill Clinton is a superdelegate, who get to pick whoever they want. Many of them have not chosen upside. Some of them choose who they're for based on the popular vote in their state or district. So, for instance, Barbara Boxer, the senator from California, had said in advance, and I assume she's going to keep to that, that she would be for whoever won the popular vote in California. So presumably Senator Clinton won not just the pledged delegates yesterday, but also won Barbara Boxer's superdelegate vote. The Obama campaign has had some success of late, Ted Kennedy, a very famous superdelegate, and some others, but they've not kind of broken through. And one of the things they're hoping to do this month is to win these February contests to get superdelegates to go. But I suspect the caller's right. Superdelegates are politicians. They're cautious. The majority of them, enough to keep anyone from getting a majority overall, will sit on their hands, sit on the fence, on their hands on the fence, and wait and see how this goes, and that may mean a convention.
Liz Halloran, when I look at the McCain coalition from state to state, it looks like he's winning everywhere with veterans, moderates, and independents. People who identify as Republicans or conservatives, still not wild about John McCain. If we assume for the moment that he gets the nomination, how does he win the presidency? Does he do it with that coalition and just hope to pull over enough swing voters, again, going away from the Karl Rove model? Or is he in deep trouble because there may not be enough of the passionate Republicans who would turn out to vote for John McCain, who they think is really not quite one of them?
Well, he certainly may be in trouble. I mean, the Republicans think that he would have a better chance against Hillary, whose support they say is she's got a high floor and a low ceiling of support, and they think that a McCain-Clinton matchup would work for McCain because he will draw those moderates and independents who wouldn't vote for Hillary Clinton. But an Obama nomination would make it much more difficult because they may be fighting for the same votes in the middle. He will have to make overtures to the conservative community. He's already begun to do that, talking about his longstanding opposition to abortion, something he's not typically comfortable talking about. But yes, he has an issue with the conservative base, and he will be working on that. He's giving a speech tomorrow afternoon before the big conservative PAC here in Washington.
CPAC, all three of them are.
Exactly, and it will be very interesting, particularly to see what John McCain talks about tomorrow.
Here's a post on our comments page from someone who asks, why were Obama's wins mostly in red states? Mark Halperin?
Well, it's a little bit of a combination of things. Number one, a lot of those were caucus states, and Obama put much more effort than Hillary Clinton did into winning those caucus states. Obama benefits from caucuses because he's got enthusiastic supporters who are more likely to turn out. He's done quite well and won every caucus but one so far against Clinton in the continental United States and in Alaska. Second, I think he does have more of an appeal to red state Democrats and those who see him as a better, stronger general election candidate and perhaps someone with more coattails in their state.
I also think, I mean, red state Democrats tend to be progressive because they're sort of reacting to the dominant party in their state. One thing I wanted to say about McCain that I think is also as big a problem as the conservative issue is that he is pro-Iraq war. He has been pro-Iraq war. And last time I checked, something like two-thirds of the country are approaching that was against the Iraq war. And I think that becomes a problem for him in the general election in reaching out to the independents and the moderates who are not now pro-war, as is he. So he's sort of boxed in from both sides. And I think, you know, talking about the whole Karl Rove strategy of sort of, you know, getting out, driving up the conservative base, but at the same time, the outreach to Latinos was sort of meant to give the Republican Party more of appeal in the center, in the sense that they had this reputation of being not the best party on race relations, but by reaching out to Latinos, they gave a certain comfort to independent white voters who might want to vote Republican otherwise, but were uncomfortable on this issue. And because of what has happened on immigration, paradoxically, that may also be a problem for John McCain in November.
And Liz, regardless of all of this tumult in the Republican Party, it looks like when we get to the general election, it's going to be classic Democratic versus Republican contemporary politics. If you look at the split on the issues, the Iraq war, dig in or get out, the Bush tax cuts, roll them back or not, Supreme Court justices, those who were strict constructionists or not, it might as well be 2004.
It's true. And what the McCain people are talking about now is they're trying to make his character and his authenticity the issues that will win him the election in November if he indeed goes on to be the nominee. As a matter of fact, I was talking to a Republican strategist yesterday about McCain, and he emailed to me some chapters from Bob Timberg's great book about McCain and his service in Vietnam and his capture and his years as a prisoner of war. They want to make character and authenticity an issue going in to the election.
Scott in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Scott.
Hi. I'm a regular WNYC listener. I've listened to a large portion of your event coverage. I'm college educated. I've voted before. I don't think I voted in a primary before. So when I walked in last night to vote, you know, there were the two candidates, or three or four candidates, and then underneath Barack and Hillary were five delegates. And next to that section, it said, vote for five in any column. So I was a little confused about voting for the actual delegates, because there were only five to choose from, and I was like, well, is this a meaningless vote, or is this an important vote? Am I essentially going to get to vote for one candidate five times? So I stepped out of the booth and started asking the election workers, and I was getting different answers, and what was really disturbing is that no one really seemed to be concerned about getting an answer for me, and I felt pretty stupid considering how much I've been paying attention to the coverage.
And you know what? It was simpler for you than it was for some other people. I know one district in Manhattan, for example, where you could vote for, I think it was six delegates for the candidate of your choice, and there were seven Obama delegates listed, so you actually had to choose which six Obama delegates, if you were voting for Obama, you know, you wanted to send, and which one you wanted to leave home. In fact, Andrew Bernstein, I don't know if somebody could split up their delegate votes and choose some Clinton delegates and some Obama delegates.
The answer is yes, you could. You can vote for anybody that you want to, and we'll take this to heart. I know that we had some copy, and we were running some in our newscast. We were talking about how the Democratic ballot worked. Sorry that you didn't get to hear that. The preference vote at the top of the ballot was to choose which candidate would potentially win the congressional district. So in your congressional district, if there were five delegates at stake, the preference, the five would be allocated according to the preference. Then who gets to go to the convention? That is what you are selecting when you choose the delegates. So if Hillary Clinton, for example, got three delegates out of the five in your congressional district, then the top three delegates for Hillary Clinton would get to go, and then the top two vote-getters for Barack Obama would get to go. So you were basically helping out, in most cases, in Hillary Clinton, your local elected officials, on the Obama side, your local community volunteers, and allowing them to go with a credential to get to Denver.
And it was interesting to see that the Clinton delegates tended to be name elected officials who people around here know if they follow political media. The Obama delegates tended to be unknown, so that shows certainly where the New York establishment lined up, for what that's worth. But you know what, Scott and everyone else? The delegate allocation system is even more confusing than that. Let me read through a few bullet points, and then Mark Halperin, you tell me what you think this might mean in a race that's this close. And again, so far, Clinton's got 845 delegates to 765 for Obama, so it's very close, with a little over 2,000 needed to clinch the nomination. But I'm not even sure we know in all cases whose delegates are whose. So, you ready? There are delegates allocated by statewide vote, proportionally in some cases, winner take all among the statewide delegates in some cases. There are delegates allocated by congressional district, winner take all within a district in some cases, proportionally even within a district in some cases. There may be some congressional districts that have very close counts that may have to be redone in one place or another. And here's one that really blows my mind. This is the difference between officially pledged delegates who are really unequivocally committed by yesterday's vote, and there are unofficially pledged delegates who may have some wiggle room at the convention depending on the rules of their state. Mark, wow.
Brian, to paraphrase the old joke, there's only two people who understand the rules of the Democratic National Committee nominating process, and unfortunately, they disagree. yeah, it is really complicated, and it's kind of up to the DNC to watch over this for all of us, because I don't know any reporters with the possible exception of our friend Ben Smith of Politico, who would actually wade into this. But it is complicated. The reality is, the most important reality besides the superdelegates that we already discussed, is that these delegates are not truly pledged, even though they're called pledged delegates by most people's understanding of it, and that under the rules, if someone gets a meaningful lead, which neither candidate has now, it's very hard for the other candidate to catch up because you split the candidates roughly evenly. On the other hand, without a big lead, it's very hard for anyone to get to a majority.
Cheryl in Denville. You're on WNYC. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
All right. What you thinking?
Listen, I'd be interested in asking your guest something about the California exit polls and specifically how the early votes factor in, because I had an opportunity to ask someone in the Obama camp about, you know, the state of California, and he said while they were doing very well, we had to be concerned about the early voters, which I imagine would favor Senator Clinton. So I want to know if there are exit polls and if you're able to discern whether or not the actual votes that were cast yesterday broke more in favor of Senator Obama or if the trend continued with Senator Clinton.
Right, and the reason that the early voting would have favored Clinton was only because she was doing better in the polls in recent weeks, and he was catching up in recent days. So depending on when that snapshot of your individual vote was taken, you might have had a greater or lesser chance of going in a certain direction.
Exactly.
Liz Halloran, I know you're covering primarily the Republicans, but this must have been an issue on the Republican side. The stat that I heard is that about half of all California votes were cast in advance. Do you know?
Well, I'm actually looking right. Yeah, that's true, and I'm actually looking at the exit polls from the Democratic side of the primary in California yesterday, and they ask, when did you finally decide for whom to vote in today's presidential primary? And 51% of those who said just today broke for Clinton and 41 for Obama. Those who decided in the last month, 38% broke for Clinton, and 57% broke for Obama.
Those who decided earlier were more for Obama, which would go against the trends in the public opinion polls.
Yeah, in the exit poll. That's what the exit poll said last night.
Mark, anything on this?
Well, Brian, I'm a little skeptical of the California exit poll based on some of the data in there about the turnout amongst African Americans. So I confess, partly out of fatigue and partly out of caution.
What is that skepticism based on? What about the African American?
If you go on pollster.com, you'll see a pretty spirited discussion. The contribution to the vote, the percent of the vote that was from African Americans, was very low. Much lower than you would think with a prominent African American on the ballot and all the efforts to turn out the African American vote. So, you know, the exit pollers do the best they can, but if you see some one or two numbers that are off, for instance, we saw in 2004, the female turnout in the early exit polls was so weighted towards, and even towards the end, was so weighted towards John Kerry. If you see something that's off, you do have to question, well, is the whole poll off? So I've not weighted big in there yet.
Andrea, 30 seconds
to
last
word.
On
the other hand, I think that the African-American vote in California is much smaller than, I think there's only actually a 7% of the California population is African-American. So if I'm not mistaken.
Lower than it's been in some previous races.
But the amazing thing is, Brian, is that both campaigns said, reset, everything starts anew today, the whole last month, who cares?
More voting on Saturday, more voting next Tuesday. On they go, and if you're exhausted, imagine how the candidates feel. But this is not over on either side. And something to look toward the future with is that, more and more people are going to be doing these early voting absentee ballots or computer voting or whatever it is. And so voting is going to become a weeks-long process in America, not leading up to a point, to a day. And that's going to change things in ways that we can hardly predict how. Liz Halloran, senior writer for U.S. News and World Report. Mark Halperin, editor-at-large, senior political analyst for Time Magazine. Andrea Bernstein, WNYC political director. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
And Brooke Gladstone from On the Media was watching the returns on television last night and listening to Talk Radio, our media watcher and listener. We'll be in with her report in a minute.